ॐ गणतमनन्दस्य जनजनश्लकय चक्षुसमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदमयं ददति सा प्रणन्तिका. मञ्चकपुत्रुभिश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च प्रीतनं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Chapter 9 of the 7th canto, entitled Prahlad Pacifies Lord Nrisingadev with Prayers. We heard in Chapter 8, a very exciting chapter, how Hiranyakashipu was ripped apart, his heart even uprooted, and Lord Nrisingadev killed him and then garlanded himself with the intestines of this abominable demon. His mane was sprinkled with blood. And so from the external material point of view, it sounds quite gruesome. But when the Lord does anything, when he wears anything, when he's attired by anything, it is all transcendentally wonderful. Transcendental means spiritual. Spiritual means non-material. So we can't use material reasoning, material logic, that which we're used to judging the world with and sorting out our experiences with. We cannot use that when trying to enter into the Lord's pastimes. To be there, to see Him, is completely different from what we would imagine it were if we were imagining here now with our material consciousness what it would be like to see Lord Nrisingadev with a garland of intestines and his mane sprinkled with blood. No. All very, very, very wonderful, very spiritually, effulgently, beyond, supra-mundane, beyond everything mundane, material. So we heard all the demigods, well, so many demigods and holy persons, including the residents of Vaikuntha, rishis, Lord Indra, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, all offer prayers glorifying Lord Nrisingadev, because Lord Nrisingadev was incredibly angry. Because he had come in an angry mood because Hiranyakashipu had dared to disturb, threaten, and challenge his innocent, harmless devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, who was the son of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu tried to kill him in so many ways. Prahlad was protected. He tried to kill him ultimately by himself, with his own sword, with his own fist. And then Lord Nrisingadev, so angry, Kauntea Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati, so angry that this rascal, Hiranyakashipu, this materialistic, self-centered, foolish rascal, had dared to kill his beloved devotee Prahlad. So he came out of the pillar so angry. Just like say if there's a small lion cub and someone tries to carry away or kill that little lion cub and the father or mother lion is nearby, they become so terribly angry. That's what the display of their power and anger would truly be awesome. And from the point of view of the person who they were attacking, it would be awful. The power would be so incredible due to the anger. It's fully natural for one to get so angry when one's unprotected, innocent, beloved, dependent is being maliciously dealt with. So Lord Nrisingadev was so angry that the prayers, the sweet prayers of all the demigods, could not placate, lessen his anger. He was still roaring ferociously in an angry mood. We'll read the first verse, first four verses, and then read the purport to 2 and then 1. So everyone, even those demigods who had praised the Lord Nisringadeva, were terrified due to the anger of the Lord. The great saint Narada Muni continued narrating this to Yudhishthira Maharaj. The demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other great demigods, dared not come forward before the Lord, who at that time was extremely angry. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, was requested to go before the Lord by all the demigods present, who because of fear could not do so. But even she had never seen such a wonderful and extraordinary form of the Lord, and thus she could not approach him. Lakshmi could approach. Thereafter, Lord Brahma requested Prahlad Maharaj, who was standing very near him, near Lord Brahma. He said, "My dear son, Lord Nisringadeva is extremely angry at your demoniac father. Please go forward and appease the Lord." Narada Muni continued, "O king, although the exalted devotee Prahlad Maharaj was only a little boy, he accepted Lord Brahma's words. He gradually proceeded towards Lord Nisringadeva and fell down to offer his respectful obeisances with folded hands." Two of the purports are part of the second one. "For the common man, the form of the Lord as Nisringadeva is certainly unseen and wonderful. But for a devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, such a fearsome form of the Lord is not at all extraordinary. By the grace of the Lord, a devotee can very easily understand how the Lord can appear in any form he likes. After all, if the Lord wants to take this form, who can stop him? Who can say, 'You can't do that'? He is the Lord. So the devotee accepts whatever form the Lord appears in is the Lord's form, and it is the Lord. Therefore, regardless of the form the Lord is in, therefore the devotee is never afraid of such a form. Because of special favor bestowed upon Prahlad Maharaj, he remains silent and unafraid, even though all the demigods, including even Lakshmi Devi, were afraid of Lord Nisringadeva. Narayana paraksave nakutaschana bibhyati." Not only is a pure devotee of Narayan like Prahlad Maharaj unafraid of any dangerous condition of material life, but also if the Lord appears to mitigate the fear of a devotee, the devotee maintains his status of fearlessness in all circumstances. So Prahlad Maharaj approached the Lord. By the Lord's grace, he was completely free from fear. He was silent and unafraid. And then from the first purport of the first verse. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung in his Prem Bhakti Chandrika, "Krodha Bhakta Dveshi Jhane." Anger should be used to punish a demon who is envious of devotees. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarja. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy all have their proper use for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees. A devotee of the Lord cannot tolerate blasphemy of the Lord or His other devotees. And the Lord can also cannot tolerate blasphemy of a devotee. Thus Lord Nisringadeva was so very angry that the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and even the goddess of fortune, who was the Lord's constant companion, could not pacify him. Even after offering prayers of glorification and praise, no one was able to pacify the Lord in his anger. But because the Lord was willing to exhibit his affection for Prahlad Maharaj, all the demigods and the others present before the Lord pushed Prahlad Maharaj forward to pacify him. So They wanted Prahlad. Because his love for Prahlad was so great that his anger became dissipated by that love. He could not be both angry and experience the love for his devotee. So his anger began to quell, to pacify him. Actually, Prahlad's prayers will be offered now. Step 5. When Lord Nrisingadev saw the small boy Prahlad Maharaj prostrated at the soles of his lotus feet, he became most ecstatic in affection toward his devotee. Raising Prahlad, the Lord placed his lotus hand upon the boy's head, because his hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all of his devotees. Prabhupada's purport. And the necessities of the material world are four: ahara, nidra, baya, and maituna, eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. In this material world, everyone is in fearful consciousness, sara samud vigna dhyam. And the only means to make everyone fearless is Krishna consciousness. When Lord Nrisingadev appeared, all the devotees became fearless. The devotees' hope of becoming fearless is to chant the holy name of Lord Nrisingadev. Yato yato yami tato Nrisinga. Wherever we go, we must always think of Lord Nrisingadev. Thus there will be no fear for the devotee of the Lord. Because if one is always thinking of the Lord in any form, then by that thinking the Lord is present. And when the Lord is present, if one is actually a devotee, the devotee who is giving everything to Krishna feels Krishna's. He feels helpless and dependent, and he feels Krishna's protection. So there will be no fear for a devotee of the Lord. The Lord also, he touched Prahlad's head with his lotus hand, and also the Lord touched another boy's head. We read about that in the fourth canto when the Lord appeared before Dhruva Maharaj. He touched Dhruva Maharaj's head as well. And Dhruva Maharaj immediately, all his senses became fully enlivened, and he was able to speak wonderful prayers, although he was just a young boy. So here, Prahlad is also going to be able to speak very wonderfully due to the touch of Lord Nrisingadev's hand. By the touch, text 6, of Lord Nrisingadev's hand on Prahlad Maharaj's head, Prahlad was completely freed of all material contaminations and desires, as if he had been thoroughly cleansed. Therefore, he at once became transcendentally situated, and all the symptoms of ecstasy became manifest in his body. His heart filled with love, and his eyes with tears, and thus he was able to completely capture the lotus feet of the Lord within the core of his heart. 7. Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and sight upon Lord Nrisingadev with full attention and complete trance. With a fixed mind, he began to offer prayers and love with a faltering voice. His mind was fully transcendental. That means it was fully clear. It was fixed in his love for Lord Nrisingadev. His mind was fixed on the Lord's lotus feet and the Lord's service and glorifying the Lord. Yet Brahma had asked him to pacify the Lord. So he began to offer prayers. And the first 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 5 prayers, Prahlad will explain in his prayers the qualifications that one must have to satisfy the Lord by his prayers. Prahlad Maharaj prayed, "How is it possible for me, who have been born in a family of asuras, a demoniac family, how is it possible for me To be born in a family of asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even until now, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma and all the saintly persons could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words, although such persons are very qualified, being in the mode of goodness. Then what is to be said of me? I am not at all qualified. So many exalted persons offered prayers, and the Lord could not be satisfied enough. His love could not be evoked enough to cool down his anger. So Prahlad is thinking, what is my qualification? Lord Brahma offered prayers. The residents of Vaikuntha offered prayers. Lord Shiva, Indra, rishis, professional glorifiers, everyone offered prayers. And they weren't successful in pacifying the Lord? How is it possible? What qualifications do I have? Prabhupada's purport. A Vaishnava who is fully qualified to serve the Lord still thinks himself extremely low while offering prayers to the Lord. For example, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, says, Jagai made hoite muni se papishta puri seira kito hoite muni se lagishta. Thus he considered himself unqualified, lower than the worms in stool, and more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. A pure Vaishnava actually thinks of himself in this way. Similarly, although Prahlad Maharaj was a pure exalted Vaishnava, he thought himself most unqualified to offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. So first qualification is being exhibited by Prahlad Maharaj. And what is that qualification? Humility. Mahajano Janagata Sapanta. Every pure Vaishnava should think like this, following the example of Prahlad Maharaj, thinking oneself unqualified. One should not be falsely proud of his Vaishnava qualifications. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore instructed us, Sinarapi Sunichena Tororiva Sihisnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtanaya Sadahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Unless one is meek and humble, to make progress in spiritual life is very difficult. So what is there for us to be humble about and meek about? Why should we be meek and humble? The great devotees see so many faults in themselves, and yet they serve, yet they don't feel discouraged. So we usually think that self-confidence is required, and self-confidence is required, but that confidence ultimately is in self with a capital S, in Krishna. Because if we are confident in our own abilities are always limited, and there's always someone else who has more abilities than us, more capacity. No matter how strong we are, a dangerous situation can be created in the material world that can overcome us. No matter how intelligent we are, a situation can be created that we can't extract ourselves from. Materialists like to see their strengths because it makes them feel strong enough to go and take on the world. And devotees like to see their own weaknesses because that makes them weak enough to depend on the Lord, feel weak enough to feel dependent upon the Lord, which makes them strong enough to take on the world, if that's their service. So dependence is on the Lord, and that is actually true strength. Because everyone in this world is ultimately weak, and everyone is flawed in so many ways. So devotees don't see their qualifications, rather they see their weaknesses, and when they view their qualifications, they see those as gifts of the Lord, just like Prahlad. He speaks so wonderfully. He was so exalted, so powerful. He sees that just as Krishna's mercy. So here he's saying, I'm not qualified compared to these exalted demigods. Who am I? How can I glorify you? Yet Brahma has told me to do so, so I'm submissive to him. Then what? What does one do with one's when one has such humility? What is a next step? Text 9, Prahlad continues. One may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster, influence, physical strength, diligence, intelligence, and mystic yogic power. So many great qualities. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. Gajendra was an elephant. He was an animal. And yet, by sincerely calling out to the Lord, he satisfied the Lord enough for the Lord to come and save him from his very dangerous, lost predicament. So what was his qualification? There was humility, because he wasn't depending upon, he realized that his strength was finished. And generally in the material world, one doesn't become humble unless one meets has met the material world head on and has been defeated by it. That's the only thing that will make someone humble, practically speaking. So all these good qualifications, qualities, if one offers those to the Lord by themselves, beauty, austerity, education, be satisfied with my beauty, be satisfied with my diligence, be satisfied with my physical strength, my influence. Does that satisfy the Lord? Prahlad says no. However, one can satisfy the Lord. So even if one has all those qualifications in and of themselves, they cannot satisfy the Lord. But one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. And then if one has that, even if one is an animal by definition doesn't have good qualities, because they're animals, they have animalistic qualities. But yet, even if an animal has devotional service, he can satisfy the Lord. Example, Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied. Prabhupada's purport. So with humility, understanding our own position, our insignificant position, and how powerless we are in the material world, then we serve the Lord, the Ishwar, the power, the source of all power, the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's short purport. No kind of material qualification is the means for satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, only by devotional service can the Lord be known. Bhaktyamam abhijananti. Unless the Lord is pleased by the service of a devotee, the Lord does not reveal himself. Naham prakashya savasa yoga maya samavrita. This is the verdict of all shastras. Neither by speculation nor by material qualifications can one understand or approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one understands him when he reveals himself. And in proportion to the love one has, the devotion one has, devotional service one exhibits, thus he, by his own will, by his own desire, by his own causeless desire, by his own mercy, he reveals himself. So therefore, this points, Prahlada is pointing to what's necessary to satisfy the Lord. Text 10. If a Brahmana has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahmana, because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called Brahmana in a position of false prestige cannot purify even himself. So the Brahmana, possessing all these good Brahminical qualities, good, why do we call them good? Because they are born of goodness. The most subtle, highest, least contaminated mode of material nature. But yet, still within the realm of material nature. And a devotee, even if externally he's not qualified, because he is a devotee, because he is surrendered to Krishna, he is considered transcendental and still higher than a non-devotee Brahmana. Reading from the last part of Prabhupada's purport. We have had actual experience of how American and Europeans, because of their full Krishna consciousness, have purified their whole families, so much so that a mother of a devotee at the time of her death inquired about Krishna with her last breath. Therefore, it is theoretically true, and it has been practically proven that a devotee can give the best service to his family, his community, his society, and his nation. So within that statement is Prabhupada's definition what the best service is for one's self, one's family, one's community, society, and nation. It's to purify them. Because the impurities that we and our friends and our families and our society and our nation and community, the impurities that we carry, the greed, the angers, the enviousness, the possessiveness, the cheatingness, all these things ultimately cause so much trouble. So much trouble. Because when we act on the platform of lust, anger, greed, envy, etc., so we may, for a short time, succeed in gaining something, but ultimately we lose. This is the law of nature. So, the best service one can give is to purify someone, because by helping someone become purified, then one is removing, helping them remove the lower parts of their nature, removing the contaminations, removing the sinfulness, removing the sinful reactions, removing the bad karma. By saying Krishna's name once, one removes more sins than one can commit in a life. That's purification, removal of contamination. That's taking a step towards an eternal solution to the problem. And that, Prabhupada is saying, is the best service to family, community, society, and nation. And that is the service that a devotee is meant to give. I was reading a conversation that took place in Australia between Prabhupada and one of the devotees' uncles, who happened to be a Jesuit priest. And he was trying to understand the service that the devotees perform for society. Do we feed people? Do we help the sick? Do we help the poor? And Prabhupada's point and answer was that the devotees, by giving God consciousness, by preaching, actually do the greatest service. Not that a devotee doesn't feel compassionate and unhappiness. Prahlad will actually say this later when he sees the suffering of others. Rather, his heart really melts because he understands the true capacity of the soul embodied within that body for real happiness. His heart breaks and he feels compassion. But yet he goes for the actual, true, ultimate solution, because there are so many other people acting to help on the temporary, ephemeral, changing platform. But the ultimate solution, very, very few people will really work on that platform. And that's what we are being requested to do by Srila Prabhupada. Text 12. So he's saying the value of devotional service, Prahlad is saying, how that gives all good qualification. The Supreme Lord, text 11. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always fully satisfied in himself. Therefore, when something is offered to him, the offering by the Lord's mercy is for the benefit of the devotee. For the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. Interesting example. We'll read Prabhupada's purport. In Bhakti Yoga, it is recommended that a devotee follow 9 principles: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanavedanam. This service of glorifying the Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on is not, of course, meant for the benefit of the Lord. I've heard this point spoken. What kind of a God is this that wants, that he demands his names being chanted? He must have some kind of a complex or something, some inferiority complex, that he doesn't feel good about himself unless he commands, orders, controls, forces people to say his glories and worship him. What kind of God, they're thinking, but actually what kind of mind do these people have? They're thinking God is like them. They're trying to measure God by, if I was to demand that of people, and you find the people who usually talk like that try their best to get people to glorify them in some way or another. But they're thinking, if I was God, and I did, if I was doing that, just imagine how sick I would have to be. But Krishna does, when he wants the devotees to glorify him, 2 points. One, as made in the verse, that it's good for the devotees. Krishna is self-satisfied. He is the supreme Atmaram. Nothing exists outside of him. He lacks nothing. Even the glories that the devotees are offering him, the glorification, is a product of his own internal energy. So it's just the energy serving the energetic. It's nothing external to him. It's not an expression of a lack that he has or a desire that he has. It's just the interplay of his energies. So he doesn't need service, but yet why is this system established? Because this loving service is the natural consciousness of the living entity, and it's for the living entity's benefit. He becomes exalted when he glorifies the Lord. Just like when we if we're looking in the mirror and we want to make the mirror image beautiful. So what is the obvious way to make the mirror image beautiful? Do we paint the mirror image? No. In this example, the mirror image is us, and the Lord is the source of the mirror image, the actual reality. So when we wish to make the mirror image beautiful, all we have to do is properly decorate the actual image, the reality. So if we actually decorate or glorify the Lord, then the mirror image of the Lord, the living entity, we are made in His image, He becomes beautiful and glorious. By glorifying the Lord, the living entity becomes glorious. By trying to make Krishna happy, sacrificing our own independent tendencies to make Him happy, then the living entity who has his own capacity to be happy, but that capacity is very small, that capacity becomes raised on an equal level or even a level surpassing the Lord. So it's in the living entity's interest. The Lord is like the ocean. Krishna is like the ocean. Whether our thimbleful of water is added or drunk ourselves, if we add it to the ocean, does the ocean suddenly feel very gratified? We put a thimbleful of water in because you've really done him a great favor and increased his volume? No, it's an insignificant contribution. We're insignificant living entities. All we have the capacity to make is an insignificant contribution. Whether we glorify or we don't glorify, practically speaking, for the ocean of Krishna, it makes no difference. But for us, the thimbleful of quality, if we offer those things to Krishna, it makes a difference for us. And therefore, when Krishna gives the process of devotional service with the 9 practices of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, it is not that He requires the glorification and the remembrance and the worship and the prayers and the surrendering of everything. But it is we who require it, for it is our natural condition. The Lord, Prabhupada continues, is always glorious whether the devotee glorifies Him or not. But if the devotee engages in glorifying the Lord, the devotee himself automatically becomes glorious. Cheto darpanam arjanam bhava mahadavagni navaparam. By glorifying the Lord constantly, the living entity becomes purified in the core of his heart, and thus he can understand that he does not belong to the material world, but is a spirit soul whose actual activity is to advance in Krishna consciousness so that he may become free from the material clutches. Such a nice expression, material clutches. We are being clutched by the material energy. We're in the grip, the vice-like clutches, grip of the material energy. And we can't free ourselves. But by glorifying the Lord constantly, the living entity becomes purified in the core of his heart, and thus he can understand that he does not belong to the material world, but is a spirit soul whose actual activity is to advance in Krishna consciousness so that he may become free from the material clutches. Thus the blazing fire of material existence is immediately extinguished. Bhava mahadavagni navapanam. A foolish person is amazed that Krishna orders sarvadamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam raja. What does that mean? Sarvadamam, all religion, all activities, all that we consider our duty, pratyaja, give them up. Well, you give them up, what should you do? Sarvadamam pratyaja mamekam, to me only, sharanam. You surrender. A foolish person is amazed that Krishna's Krishna orders Savadamam Pratyajam Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Abandon all varieties of religious activities and just surrender unto me. Some foolish scholars even say that this is too much to demand. But this demand is not for the benefit of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, it is for the benefit of human society. If human beings individually and collectively surrender everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full Krishna consciousness, all of human society will benefit. One who does not dedicate everything to the Supreme Lord is described in this verse as avidusha, a rascal. In Bhagavad Gita 7:15, the Lord Himself speaks in the same way. Namam duskritano mudha prapadyante naradama mayaya pitagyana asuram bhavamasrita. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Because of ignorance and misfortune, the atheists and the Naradamas, the lowest of men, do not surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although the Supreme Lord Krishna is full in himself, he appears in different yugas, in different ages, to demand the surrender of the conditioned souls so that they will benefit by becoming free from the material clutches. In conclusion, the more we engage in Krishna consciousness and render service unto the Lord, the more we benefit. Krishna does not need service from any of us. So, this surrender is actually the qualification that of the one who is offering the prayers, the quality of surrenderedness is the qualification that makes the Lord inclined to hear the prayers of the devotee. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained this point in his song Sharanagati, which means returning to our surrendered position. So if one is surrendered to the Lord hears his prayers. And what are the qualities of surrender? Anukulasya sankalpa pratikulasya varjanam rakshishyatiti vishvasa gotipte varanam tata atma vichepta karpanye sadvidam sharanagati. These six qualities which comprise surrender, or the soul's giving himself to Krishna, which again is his natural position, is accepting everything favorable for devotional service and rejecting everything unfavorable. Having full faith, it's two. Having full faith that the Lord will protect, and to consider oneself gotripte varanam, consider oneself fully under the Lord's protection. Consider the Lord will always care for one, and place oneself fully under the Lord's protection. And that's the main anga, or the main part of surrender. That I am serving you and I am yours. I am fully dependent upon you. And atma, the chaita, giving everything to the Lord, and karpanye, humility. So if one has these six qualities, gotripte varanam tata, again, is the central one. Like an animal is dependent, like a cow. If the cow isn't given food by the person who under whose care he is, what will happen to the cow? who get leaner and leaner and leaner and then leave this world. He's tied up. He has no capacity to fend for himself. So similarly, a devotee places himself under the care of the Lord in that way, tied up by his surrender to the Lord. And if the Lord wishes to protect him, he says, okay, that's the Lord's mercy. And if the Lord doesn't wish to protect him in some circumstance, he sees that within that seeming non-protection is also the Lord's mercy. And his protection is there in a different way. So therefore, as Prahlad explained earlier, a devotee, and Prabhupada explained, a devotee only a devotee can be fearless in this world, because he's under Krishna's protection and his faith and trust and realization is so deep, so therefore he can be fearless. Therefore Prabhupada's name was Abhay Charanaravinda. A.C. Bhaktivinanta Swami Prabhupada. A.C. Abhay Charanaravinda. Fearless at the lotus feet of the Lord. Text 13. So what will Prahlad, now he's practically established how to pray, and what are the qualifications for praying? One has to be humble. One has to be a devotee. Regardless of whatever disqualifications one may have, and if one's humble, or if one's even honest, one will see so many disqualifications. But the one qualification of surrendered Sharanagati, if one is Sharanagata, if one is a devotee surrendered to Krishna, that qualification will cause the Lord to be inclined to hear the prayers of the devotee. And that offering of prayers is for the benefit of the devotee. Oh, we didn't read the... As Prahlad in 12, Prabhupada said, decided to offer his best prayers to the Lord without consideration of his material position. He didn't think himself qualified yet. He was doing it. Oh my Lord, what will he pray for? Oh my Lord. Oh, actually, I think we can stop here. We'll start hearing tomorrow what Prahlad prayed for. Because now he's established. Actually, I didn't read the 12th one. So everyone must become a devotee. That's the point. So I'll just read this 12th verse in purport. Therefore, although I was born in a demoniac family, I may without a doubt offer prayers to the Lord with full endeavor, as far as my intelligence allows. Anyone who has been forced by ignorance to enter the material world may be purified of material life if he offers prayers to the Lord and hears the Lord's glories. Prabhupada's purport. It is clearly understood that a devotee does not need to be born in a very high family, to be rich, to be aristocratic, or to be very beautiful. None of these qualifications will engage one in devotional service. With devotion, one should feel, God is great and I am very small. Therefore, my duty is to offer my prayers to the Lord. Only on this basis can one understand and render service to the Lord. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Ambakyamam abhijananti yavanyas chasmi tatfata tatomam tatfato gyatva vishate taranantanam. One can understand the Supreme Personality as he is only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Thus Prahlad Maharaj decided to offer his best prayers to the Lord without consideration of his material position. And so tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll hear what Prahlad, what desires is he going to express through his prayers. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? It's in Prabhupada's books in so many places, but I can't remember the exact source. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur has described it it's not in the Bhagavatam, but it's in somewhere, one of the Puranas or somewhere, or some Vaishnava. Where? But where is he quoting it from? Yeah.
That's a source.
I think there's a more primary source than that. Yeah? Okay. But in any case, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the first song of his songbook entitled Sharanagati or Surrender, has this as the introductory song. And in that he describes it as well. And probably where it's quoted from too.
Also discusses surrender.
Yes.
Is that any different from?
No, same. This is what it means to surrender. And the other way to look at it, what it means is Savadhamam Pratyaja. Another way of defining what it means, surrender, is the verse prior to that. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru. That if one Manmana madbhakto, bhava madbhakto. If one thinks about me, places his mind always on me, Krishna says, and becomes my devotee, always offering obeisances and worshipping me, that's also surrender. Surrender means when this soul, who is Tatastha Shakti, who is the marginal energy, who is now under the influence of the, he surrendered to the Maya Shakti, the external energy. He's going to change the energy that he surrendered to the internal energy, to the spiritual energy. That's what he's surrendering to Krishna's service. Is that any other question? Any other? Yes.
About the quality of humility to become a devotee, my question is twofold. There are so many people that I know who are humble, willing to help at any given point, you know, even to their very convenience, and yet not inclined to Krishna consciousness. And then there are who are not humble, but then still get the
mercy.
So, how is that?
So, of course, there are many ways to answer that question. There is a certain piety that one has to have to become a devotee, a certain sukriti, bhakti, a specific type of sukriti, bhakti, unmukha sukriti, that has to accumulate in one's over many lives that makes one inclined to devotion. So there are verses that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes in his Harinam Chittamani, and they're not uncommonly known, that there are so many good qualities, and Prahlada said it too. There are so many qualities of a devotee. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, the 26 qualities of a devotee are listed. And a devotee is humble, he's meek, he's expert, poetic, silent. But if someone's humble and meek and expert and poetic and silent, but doesn't possess the core quality, the sarup lakshana, the main characteristic, primary characteristic of devotion, which is surrender to Krishna, then he's not a devotee. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this in reference to the point of Vaishnava Aparad, because in dealing with the devotees, we may say, well, there's 26 qualities of a devotee, and this fellow over here, he's neither humble, nor meek, nor poetic, nor silent, nor clean, nor this, nor that, or not to that. I can offend him first thing in the morning until late at night, and it won't make a difference. In fact, it'll be quite fun. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that even if one doesn't have any of the qualities of a devotee, but one has that one quality of surrender to Krishna, that makes him a devotee. And gradually the others will come. But even if they don't come, that one quality of surrender is so important and so powerful and so core and essential that makes him a devotee. So if the question is, who's better, someone who has all these qualities and is an exalted person but doesn't have devotion, and there's a dog eater, as Prahlad says, who has horrible external characteristics, who is better if that dog eater is surrendered to Krishna, is actually a devotee? He is better because he can purify the whole world, one exalted person like that. So why is the good qualities will gradually come? And what is the past history of such people? They have to have such seemingly mixed karma like that, or piety and impiety. We don't know that, but that's what it is. Or another way to look at it, if this person has gotten the mercy, as you called it, and this person has so many good qualities, but he hasn't gotten the same kind of mercy, that's just the nature of mercy. It does what it wants. It's independent. Krishna is independent. Is that all right?
Because sometimes a lot of times I get stuck in answering this question, when I speak to someone about spiritual life or something, and they say, well, yeah, all that is fine, but ultimately we are imperfect, and how can we actually know what is true and what is not true? And the only answer I can come up with is that if you are sincere, if you're really sincere and you want to know the answer, then somehow or other the right source will come to you. I myself feel that answer is not complete.
Well, what's your answer? How do you know it's true?
I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Well, how do you answer it for yourself, never mind to others? That's usually the key.
Yeah.
That's usually the key. Well, how do you answer the question? How do you know anything in this world? That's an essential epistemological question, philosophical question. How do we know anything in this world? So if we don't trust the Shastra, or we don't trust a holy person, we trust the scientists and we accept what they say. No, how do we believe them and get the knowledge from them? We have some faith. How do we know that the rocket has gone up and has docked? Just because they show us some far out picture that you can also see in if you go to the movies and watch Star Wars or something like that, and they have so many far out pictures, but you don't believe that happened, but you believe that picture. Why? Because there's a faith, there's a trust. So where does that faith come from? Why does one person trust one thing and another person trust another? That's another piety or the grace of God. But to answer those type of questions, I find it most important to understand the answer for yourself. Why do you accept Krishna consciousness? Or how deeply do we accept, and what don't we accept? What are we holding back? And these kind of, it's very, then we become humble. When we see her. Is that all right? Or? That's called introspection. And Prabhupada once said many years ago, the key to preaching was speaking from one's own realization. And if all you can say, he said, is these people are very nice. You know, I like the people who are chanting, they're very nice. He said, if that's all you can actually honestly say, it will have its own potency. I like to chant because it makes me happy. If that's our realization, we should speak from that point. That's the key of preaching, preaching from your realization. Okay, yes.
You were speaking about humility and said that sometimes the person becomes humble only when material nature.
Speaking from my experience, my own personal experience. Yes.
From materialistics, from materialist persons, you see that although sometimes things go against the plan, and big defeat becomes like a source of pride, they become worst.
That's only round one. Wait till round two and three and four and five and six.
But maybe it's, so
you're saying, what if there's a person who's so determined to be proud and depend upon himself that nothing in the material, like even death is coming on and he's saying, I don't care, I'm going to die an atheist, not a hypocrite. I don't care. Yeah, there are people like that.
Even if they are defeated eternally, they will never become humble. That is my question. That they will be eternally humble by the material nature, but that doesn't mean that they become humble with God. They could be eternally proud or
true.
Externally humble, but internally they are just.
That suffering in and of itself does not bring God consciousness. But if you have the slightest seed of God consciousness in you, then suffering really can help you, and that's the way the material nature works. If you have the slightest inclination, then can those kind of things, not that we wish these things to happen to ourselves or anyone else, but yet that's the way that it works. And when there are great disasters, what happens is the world very much polarizes. There are so many people who are great demons and so many people who are very pious. But when there's a disaster, you don't know which way everyone is going to go. There's so many stories of these of horrible demonic scientists, behavioral psychologists, B.F. Skinner, very, very heavy materialists. Then when they're dying, they have a complete change of heart. And the other way around too. They become angry. And I don't believe in anyone who'd make or cause all this suffering. So you don't know. But if one chants and becomes purified and cultivates something, when the pressure's on, he'll turn to Krishna. But we've seen also that some people, they serve for so many years and then, boom, become very antagonistic. But yet, what they've done is adding piety to their faith, adding Shraddha to their account, so to speak. But you're right, suffering doesn't automatically bring advancement. Just like being put in prison doesn't rectify someone automatically. But there are certain kinds of people who would, you know, they just vow, never again am I going to do this.
Apparently, when nuns taking birth in the third canto, they explain that generally the living entity suffers so much that to some degree he suffers.
But that's not every living entity who prays like that. Very fortunate living entities. Yeah.
In the case of the bodies,
the ones who pray like that become liberated by Krishna's mercy.
In the case of the bodies, like Kunti Devi, she prays more powers. She prays more powers because that means.
And we're so fortunate we don't have to pray for them, they come. She has to pray for them. Krishna's so kind. Yes? Okay, that means it's the end of class. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Lord Nityananda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Gaura Nitai ki jai.